The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes. Oops, oops, oops.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and to my left is Tiziana, Mom So Hard, Severse.
Who's going school shopping?
Yeah, you have to, right?
You got to. Let's go get a backpack, y'all. Come on.
I
get
know.
In the car. Get in the minivan.
You know, I found out they had
shoes and backpacks. Let's go.
I found out that weekend before last was a tax-free weekend in South Carolina for kids for going back to school.
It was.
We do not have that option in North Carolina. No.
I thought that happened. Oh, okay.
No,
we have it. South Carolina is twice a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we have it nuns a year.
Well, they didn't advertise this past time as much as I remember, or I'm just that busy. But yeah. And it is kind of open, little leeway in the fact of certain items you can buy will be tax-free. Not necessarily if it meant for school.
Well, that luscious voice you just heard was Rick Big Daddy Carter.
Yeah.
And behind the glass, or actually he's behind the wall and the door. If you heard that, that was Andy,
yeah.
Rocket Man Bishop.
Hey, I'm closer now.
Yes, you are. And we are back in the studio with Pastor Michael Miano from the Blue Point Bible Church. Mike.
Blessing to be back.
So glad to have you here for part two of your series of Let's Talk About Something That's Going to Make Everybody Mad. You ready? Let's go. No. No.
Jump right in.
Let's jump right in.
At least you know what you're getting with a title like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a joke. I'm going to tell this joke, and I'm just going to go ahead and say this, that if it's bad, I'll have Andy cut it.
That's like a, so there like, was a, like money and you're burning in your pocket.
There was a pastor. He was standing in front of this small community church. It was kind of a, you know, the small church that everybody knows. Everybody knows each other, and they're a little judgmental, but, you know, that's just how it works. You know, everybody's kind of watching this community. That's how it is in this community, okay? So the pastor stands up, and he looks over to his right, and down on the front pew is somebody that they know in their community to be a pretty much out homosexual man. And the pastor looks at him, and he's kind of surprised because he's never seen him here in this church. And so he gives the announcements, and then he says, let's pass the plates. And so the plates pass, and then the plates come up to the front. And when the pastor looks down, he sees on top of the plates two crisp $100 bills on top of a bunch of dollar bills, you know, and he looked at it, and he was somewhat surprised because he'd never seen anything quite like that. And so he reached down, and he grabbed the two crisp $100 bills, and he had them up. And he said, you know, guys, I normally don't talk about this. I really don't get into tithing much here. He said, but this is the first time I've ever seen anybody give with this much to our church. And obviously, they want to do something. They feel like they need to give this to the Lord. And so I don't mean to call you out, but who gave this much to the Lord today? Because I believe you need a blessing. Well, the man that was in the front row raised his hands. And so the pastor looked down and he says, that's a beautiful thing. And he said, I tell you what you're going to do. I'm going to let you pick the hymns out today. And so the man looked at him and he said, okay, I'll take him, him, and him. Now, that may be too wrong, but this is about community.
I might have to unretire the Price is Right horn sound.
Oh, yeah.
So, needless to say.
you got to follow that, Michael. You
at the Blue Point Bible Church, we like hymns.
We do, too.
Good follow.
United Church of Christ. Yeah.
So, needless to say, let's talk about community and being judgmental. And no, just kidding. Let's get back into where we were. So you had ended, you had started talking about Romans 12. We wrapped up on Romans 12. So let's kick it off. Where else do you want to take us in this conversation?
Yeah. So I appreciate, by the way, the feedback. And I really think talking about community is so important that I hope that podcast really maybe made people think and maybe made people realize that it's okay to feel frustrated with my community, the communities around me, the community I wish I was a part of, whatever it might be. It's okay. Being disenfranchised with community, in my estimation, and hopefully you've noticed I've added in my estimation, my opinion, because a lot of what we believe and what we think we know is our opinion. And my opinion is that community needs to be diverse, and it's actually healthiest when we feel a bit disenfranchised, that this isn't what it should look like, that this isn't the way I would do it. Well, that's a great place to be. And if I guess I'll set the stage with this. So going back, I'm a pastor, so I'm always frustrated with community, always frustrated with ministry. It's kind of, part of the job. They say, never ask a pastor on a Monday, how was church or how you like life or anything. Actually, I always love life because I'm living life to the full. But, obviously, pastors tend to be frustrated with community and ministry, and that's really a part of the reality. I think, you're shepherding sheep. And if you care, it's going to be frustrating. So going back this year, I'll go back to April. And in April, I found myself frustrated. And I woke up in the morning. I wrote some notes here to just kind of keep myself on point here.
We should do that. We never do that around here.
We used to.
Who cares?
Well, let's be clear. I've had the notes. We went through a whole podcast where I looked at them 3 times. So, it shows you.
See, that's exactly how notes
that's
should
how
be.
That's how we meander around here.
That's perfect.
Especially if you want to listen and you want to understand where other people are at in what they're saying, put your notes aside for a little bit and listen. Read the room. That's a quote my wife and I talk about a lot. I think we could all use a little bit more emotional intelligence and learning how to read the room.
Yeah.
So myself included, probably most primary.
I'm talking about me when I say amen. Amen.
Yeah, that's right. Me too. Trust me.
I was talking about you too, Andy. Yeah.
I was just more impressed with the fact that Andy used the words amen.
There you go. That's right.
He actually had a post on Facebook that I really wanted to comment on, but I said, no, I'll leave it alone. It was actually really good.
Oh boy.
Well, let's not derail him, but I am dead curious.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. We'll leave the audience to know. You're never going to know now.
Not now. I'd have to use my phone, and that's being inappropriate.
Maybe you're at the end.
We have to wait for the next podcast.
That's right.
So going back to April, on April 30th to be exact, I went to bed thinking and lamenting community. Mm-hmm. Just thinking, thinking about my church community, thinking about the Berean Bible Church community, a lot of the preterist communities, the preterist community. And I say that lightly because as I wrote on social media earlier today, we have a lot of preterists. I don't know that we have much of a preterist community. Mm-hmm. And so in April, I kind of went to bed thinking about that. And then I woke up the next morning and I did what I usually do. I kind of find something to read that'll encourage me. I listen to maybe a podcast or a video. I usually do what they call doom scrolling, scroll through social media and find a video, a Burroughs of Berea podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, I guess a lot of us are, right? So I did that and I ended up finding it was like a church outreach seminar. And I was like, all right, something light, something easy. I don't want to get too big into theology this morning. I'm frustrated. I usually know if I'm frustrated, stay away from theology. Don't read Facebook posts. Don't engage. So that morning I ended up watching this thing. It was talking about coffee with a pastor, an idea that's worked in some areas where the pastor maybe creates an idea where people can come and have coffee with him. And sometimes it sounds like posturing, but either way, you could come and talk to the pastor, have conversations that you normally wouldn't be able to have in church, et cetera. And they said something very interesting. They said, and this leans in on what we talked about community in the last episode, there has never been a better time to be in ministry. Hmm. Amazing opportunity for us. Demonstrate the importance and the value, and this is a paraphrase, demonstrate the importance, the value, and our contribution to the church. So what they were saying was that despite the time that it seems like we're very divided and people don't see the importance of the church, people are not engaging the church, people are leaving the church. I read Isaiah and I say, where is this Mount Zion that we're supposed to people are supposed to stream up to and ask, teach us his ways. And when I heard that quote, I thought about it. I said, well, God's telling me that this is exactly the time where there is opportunity, when we're disenfranchised, when people are leaving the community. Well, then that's time for people that understand community or want community to start talking more about it. And or when people are saying that, the church is divided, well, maybe it's not about helping them see unity, or maybe it is about helping them see unity, but not unity the way that we think unity should be, where everybody thinks alike, right? Conformity, but rather help people understand, no, true unity is found in Corinth, where some people believed it was only okay to eat vegetables and some people believed they could eat all things. So I see the advantage. So I was very encouraged in April when I heard that podcast. And then interestingly enough, in light of some of the things we talked about in the last podcast, they quoted that there's power in the personal. And that's where this podcast was leaning in on, with coffee with the pastor. Make it personal, make it real, make it authentic. So that lasted, and usually like encouragement does, it lasted about 2 months, and then now here we are.
Or leaky vessels.
Yes, amen. That's right. That sounds familiar. Yeah. And so here I am in June 9th to be exact. I woke up in the morning complaining to God about community and how
so,
community.
So doesn't... you started my birthday by complaining to God.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Hopefully, I wished you happy birthday first and then complained. But boy,
we want you to conform, Andy.
We actually recorded a podcast on his birthday. We were here on your birthday.
Yep.
We were.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
If I would have listened to that, maybe I did listen to that.
You probably did, like six weeks later.
That's how it works. Yeah, I get true. It. That's right. That's right.
I did not want to derail. I was just like, I can make this about me for a second.
Nothing wrong with that.
Got it.
Well, I hope you woke up examining yourself as well. And maybe not experiencing...
Careful. Just privately, in the comfort of your own home.
Yeah. I was like, you better define that.
That's fair.
Examining your mind.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Ray. Yeah. So brothers of four.
Yeah.
So, you know, I woke up examining myself and really just thinking, examining my mind and really thinking through, you know, the things of God. And when I examine myself, a lot of times I pour out my heart to God. You know, God, I'm frustrated. I'm, you know, this is my dad. I'm sitting in his lap. I'm just kind of sharing. And I've never had that experience. So I'm learning from what other people have told me about, you know, that type of experience.
Yeah.
And I just, the privilege, actually, if I may add, I have children now. So I do know a bit about
that
experience.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And at least what I think it should look like. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just sharing my heart with God. And I began to have a personal rebuke, and that's usually the way God speaks to me. It's kind of the way I speak to my children, where, you know, you keep complaining for so long. Well, I'm going to help you see the error in some of your complaints here, because it sounds like you're making yourself frustrated, right? And that morning I just kept saying, you know, God, why does this community look like this? Why can't the preterists see the value of community? Why can't we get together and be unified? Why can't more people see things the way I see them? You know, and just going on and on. And now, I don't know that God was like, you're wrong, but more so, well, then what are you doing about it? And I came up with this phrase that I've been using, and I'm actually going to be working on a podcast. You may have seen it on social media, called Act Apostolic. And that's what I heard God say that morning was, if you see the problems, act apostolic.
I get to learn a new word.
Apostolic. So apostles, right? The apostles are the first person on the scene. So to act apostolic would be doing the things that the first person on the scene would be doing, right?
That's a great word.
So,
I like it.
So, you know, all right, well, rather than complain, do something about it, right? And that started this journey for me lately. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, we've been doing this church rummage sale sermon series, which began pretty much right after that moment for me on June 9th. It was our summer sermon series. So what did I mean? Well, I think we're all familiar with the phrase, I think it's Gandhi that had said it, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world. Right, I think it might be Gandhi. It's probably attributed to many different people. But whatever problems you see, be the change that you want to see. And I started thinking about that, and that's where I'm at with community right now, is wanting to be the change. But then as I've noticed, as I've talked to more and more people, there's so many elements to community that need to be dealt with, right? Whether it's us accepting the fact that people that view community differently than me, or the needs for community differently than me, or what a community looks like differently than me, what a community is supposed to do. Being willing to wrestle with that is where I'm at, and I'm kind of growing through that. And this morning, if I may mention this last thing here, and hopefully I've set the stage for a bit of conversation, in Jeremiah chapter 23, it talks about it's God pretty much answering Israel as to why they are in the situations that they are, right? Jeremiah was a prophet who prophesied during Babylonian captivity, or some people want to say after Babylonian captivity, depending on the dating. But either way, he's prophesying about that captivity. And he tells them that, well, you're shepherds, did not care. They acted, you know, they allowed you to be scattered like people with no shepherd, and they did wicked, and your prophets, and it just goes on in laments. But then there's something right there in the midst of it where God promises Israel that he will give them shepherds. And I know you keep reading, and obviously most of us would say that's a messianic text that's talking about Jesus being the righteous branch. However, I don't know that I agree with that. I think that there's shepherds, there's pastors. Again, it says it in Ephesians 4 that he's given us pastors, shepherds. So when I read Jeremiah 23 now, 2025, I say he has given us shepherds, but are the shepherds shepherding, or do we look all too much like what we read in Jeremiah or prior? We can learn from that. We can learn right now. Maybe shepherding has been being done wrong for the past 2,000 years. We talked about Constantine since that time. But what if we did it differently? What if we allowed ourselves to truly renew our minds in that regard? And that's really where I'm hoping to take the conversation, is talking about what does it look like for the church to, you know, again, because we could talk about the value of community across the board. I mentioned the quote from Margaret Mead earlier. I think the secular society, interestingly enough, knows the value of community. You know, you see all these different organizations. I was thinking even before about, we mentioned Universalists. You know, they have the Unitarian Universalists. They have a beautiful community, and I've joined with them for worship and felt value. As I was talking with you earlier, Rick, I can go into any learning environment and find some sort of value or something out of that. I think that's a gift God has given me, and I thank him for that. So that being said, the secular society seems to understand the importance of community. We see more recently a lot of protests have been popular. I know that's a conversation in our church we talk about, and people see the value. But then for some reason in the church, we have people leaving the church in droves. We have people just saying, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus, but I don't want to go to church. We have people in the preterist community calling themselves a community, but I don't know what sort of community we've created. I don't know if we have the systems and structures that would make us actually a community, which aren't too much. I think I'm sure we would agree that there's not too much that we need to say something's a community, but there needs to be something. Mm-hmm. Because when I read, and I'll end on this point here and hopefully hear from each of you, when I read my New Testament, there's a bunch of, and I have a list here, of a bunch of one another's. How do you care about the one another's? How do the one another's make any sense? We talked about Romans 12 verses 1 through 2, right? Romans 12 verses 3 through 4 says, well, let me jump
in. I opened it up to mine too, because we talked about it so much last time. I was like, I better have it ready to go.
There you go. I wasn't actually planning on going back to it, but then I read it. I was like, wait a minute, this stands out.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
It's Romans 12, 4 through 5. And it says, for as in one body, we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, he's writing to a corporate group of people, telling them, and that's where I think leans in on what we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. where the corporate group tends to think we're the community. No, no, you're a community. You're one new man mm-hmm. out of the many hymns that the Lord has mm-hmm. created, right? You know, the many one new mans, the one many bodies that he has. But again, it's one unified body with many members. And rather than, I think what we've done is a lot of churches have done, where they say, we are the body and the people you see around the room are the members. I would say, no, your group is a body. It's one big body part with, it's sort of like a hand.
Yeah, you're the fingernail over
right.
there.
Right, you're the many pieces of that hand. So I wish that we would get back to seeing the value of community and seeing that caring for one another is so important, and being able to heed these many one another's. There's a great teaching by Dr. Gene Getz. For some people, that's a dated name. But Dr. Gene Getz has a series that he taught back in the 1990s where it was basically renewing our minds. It's leaning in on that Romans 12 text. It's a spiritual maturity or something to that effect. But either way, he has a whole session where he talks about the importance of fellowship. And he mentions the one another's in about 8-10 verses that talk about one another. And if we're not gathering in community, how is any of that possible?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple things. Gandhi expressed that sentiment in writing, but not in those words. Those words are most likely, that formulation of the sentiment is most likely attributed to a high school teacher from Brooklyn, whose name I can't read because my phone won't open. Arlene Lawrence. So that particular formulation of the sentiment is Arlene Lawrence. Gandhi did express that sentiment, but in a different set of words. Crap. There was like three things that I knew I should write these things down when I have these thoughts.
Take notes. That's the most important thing that we're all going to take from this particular session. Yeah. We're going to follow Pastor Mike's example, and we're going to start taking notes.
I remember this one. Here's a hot take. the minute you sit down to discuss preterism, it is entirely an academic conversation. In the same way physics is, right? Mm. It loses all meaning when it is expressed as a conversation between two people. I don't think you can have a conversation. It's not in the nature of that particular conversation that talking about it to another human, not expressing the idea, but having a conversation about that idea, it loses all potency immediately. And it kind of like is fundamental to the nature of how we are re-arriving at preterism as a society, because it requires a sort of academic reading of the Bible, and there is nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. But it starts as a more academic reading of the Bible and thus continues as an academic manner, not necessarily inside the person, but every discussion of it is going to be almost entirely academic.
Right.
It just has to be.
I'm going to give you one of the weirdest definitions of preterism. Are you ready, Mike? Because you've been a preterist for a long time. You ready? Preterists are great at telling you how to get to the place, but they don't tell you how to live it when they are there.
That's the thing, right?
Like, if you if you get the idea of like what it's saying, this is how we got to this place, but then it doesn't know how to live in this place.
That's because we are the Third Testament,
and
your
views and what you're doing, living as a pastor and living in your community and working on these things and learning how to love and learning how to like do all these things. That's what living in our faith is in this world, right? Preterism has a beautiful way of developing this incredible worldview. It's a beautiful worldview. But once we get here, we have all of these conferences. There's this conference, one of my favorite, Berean Bible Church. How shall we then live? They never talk about how we live.
No. Nope.
They just talk about how we got here.
Yes.
And that's what they do. And I told, and you know what? I talked to Pastor David Curtis. He told me, he said, next time he wants to focus on the actual theme itself and talk about how do we live. That, I was like, I think that's amazing because I try to stick to that theme. I try to stick to the theme of any conference, but that's what preterists do. And Glenn Hill said it best. I think he was actually quoting Joel Rosenauer, but he said preterists have a great mind, but do they have a loving heart?
Yeah, he had one of his last.
That feels right.
Yeah, exactly.
Feels right.
One of last Glenn's discussions was on that, and it was like standing ovation.
Yeah.
About the heart and how he kind of rebuked the preterists.
Yep.
For not having open heart. And Andy, you said it pretty well that preterism is absolutely academic.
Yes, yeah, it requires an academic reading of the Bible.
But the thing is, if you live in that reality, that has some pretty gigantic ramifications for how you're going to treat each other and the world right now and how you're going to choose to be present.
It should.
And that's the part of the conversation that really is. And the thing is, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a preterist. Eschatology is one of those things that if it doesn't help you be a better person now, I don't care.
Well, it does.
I don't care. And that's the thing.
Wrong.
But that's the thing. But with the preterism movement and I listened to, what was his name? Charles What's-His-Face.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. One of the Berean people.
Charles, what's
his name? Dr. Charles. I thought it was Charles. Whatever. I could be wrong. Somebody at the Berean thing. You guys were doing a roundtable and I was talking about it. And he was saying that one of the greatest consequences for this whole rapture theory and this idea is that it has caused Christians today to completely abandon their responsibilities here and now to the earth, to one another, and to God.
Yeah. Gary DeMar.
Gary DeMar, that's it. I don't know why I said Charles. Because DeMar. Charles
DeMar
guy.
Sounds like
Charles de Gaulle. The president of France.
Oh, yeah.
And because eschatology is one of those things, like, I don't care how we're going to die. I just want to care how we're going to live. But when he said that, I was like, that was the thing that made me realize that preterism has an enormous potential to contribute to a changing in the way we live our lives as Christians. And so it troubles me to hear that in the actual circle, they're not doing that. Like, they're not talking about that. That blows my mind because, like, that seems like the most important part.
I'll say this. Hi, Gary. You don't want to hear what he thinks that action should be because of preterism.
No, I do. I did listen to that part. I did listen to that part, and I'm not going to get into it.
Gary is Andy's favorite person.
Yeah.
I know. I like him.
Yeah.
I just, we have disagreements. As a human, I think he's a cool guy.
So from the standpoint of preterism.
I don't mind. I come from a place where academic arguments are a thing.
Yes.
And I didn't realize until about last year that that was not true of everybody.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about what Pastor Mike said, though, because when you're talking about community, and this body motif is a favorite of Paul's because he uses it in 1 Corinthians as well. If all of us were the eye, then where would the sense of smell be? So Paul really likes to use this concept of your body being, and in Romans he talks of just now that you just read, he says, present your body as a living sacrifice, right? And talks about that a lot. You know, this could be like your spiritual act of worship to, like, you know, you think of a sacrifice as something that you kill, but your offering is to offer your body as a living sacrifice in service of one another and to see yourself as a small part in this larger whole. Paul was constantly encouraging us to think about ourselves in that way and to be also humble in that when you recognize that you as an individual, a finger can do nothing by itself. And I think that's the piece that when it comes to community, creating community, wrestling with it, is also understanding that if a body's going to grow, a cell has to divide. Hmm. And each piece has to go in a different direction in order to fulfill its destiny to be a part of the brain or the foot or the whatever. And if we could just figure out how to see ourselves instead of being in having an enmity between the left and the right hand or the left and the right foot, to recognize that each piece of the body has a job.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. You know that we said so many great things in the midst of this that I want to hold on to a couple parts real quick. You're right. You're right that we need to recognize, and the only way true unity is going to happen is when we recognize it's never going to be the way that we think. That's what Romans 12 is getting at, right? Mm. Presenting your body, by the way, I don't think of the physical body when I read that text. Mm-hmm. I think of my identity. Everything about me is being offered to God so that I will not be conformed to the patterns that are destroying this world, but rather being transformed by the renewing of my mind so that I can prove what the will of God is. Mm-hmm. You see, when I read that, that's what I think about exactly what we're talking about here. That because Romans and the church at Rome and the church at Corinth were extremely divided. That's the whole point of the letters, that they were divided on all these particular things. When if you guys would recognize you're a body that's going to see things differently, you know, I tend to think today my eyes saw a lot of beautiful stuff as I wandered around. However, my legs didn't agree with the beauty that my eyes were seeing, you see? And I think if we look at that in the sense of the body, that there's going to be different times and different things. Now,
legs tend to think that beauty is flat.
That's right. exactly. Laying in a bed. That's right.
Downhill.
That's right. You know, Rick, you said something before, and I want to go back to something Andy was mentioning, but you mentioned about where preterism, and of course I'm going to lean in on that community for a moment here. But again, I speak to the larger Christian community those that follow after Jesus, because even Christian is a divisive term for some folks, where we understand that there's many that would follow after Jesus that would not ever call themselves a Christian, and in some cases, rightfully so. But that being said, I read a book years ago that said, and it wasn't talking about preterism, but it was talking about Christians, where it says, they told me to lay my life at the cross, but never told me what to pick up and where to go.
Right.
You see, and I remember reading that book and saying, oh, this guy's speaking my language. That was Shane Claiborne in The Irresistible Revolution. And I read that. And then years later, I was introduced to preterism. So now here I am. You guys told me it's the end times. We're past the end times, but you never told me what we're supposed to do next.
Yeah.
You see, and it's the same problem again. And that kind of brings me to what Andy was talking about with the academic exercise, right? You didn't use those words, but I will. Yes. Preterism tends to be very academic. And lately, I think that preterism, I lead a ministry called The Power of Preterism, so I tend to believe there's power in preterism. However, I'm starting to realize I think the power I'm talking about is different than the power a lot of other people are talking about. I'm not talking about the power of time statements.
Right.
You see, I'm talking about the power of what comes when we understand where we are. Mm-hmm. And what we do next. And for me, that's what preterism provided. And I think as people have followed my ministry, they notice that that's what I've tried to talk about. I've tried to lean in on that. Now, there's a lot of stopped ears in the preterist community because of that academic exercise. We don't really want to hear, what do we do next? And to Pastor Dave Curtis's, you know, point, I would say that at their conference, they have talked about it. Glenn Hill's talked about it. You know, many of preachers, even Pastor Dave, he's edified me in many ways where I've...
I'm not poo-pooing on all the conferences.
No, I know that.
I'm just saying when you know, a lot of times it's really like a... You want to talk about academic?
It is.
Go to a conference and listen.
I think... talking about...
Tell me how you really feel, Rick.
Oh, my gosh.
Talking about preterism in public just is going in that manner is going to attract people that... like an academic argument.
Of course.
That's just like...
That's why they're there.
That's why they're there.
Totally.
Right. Because like that's their little
but
that's
it's
their
not
football
the
game.
Theme. It's not the theme.
Right.
The theme is how shall we then live.
That's
it's
a
not
football game.
How much more can we study to know
right.
more
right.
about this?
It becomes like a final exam for 3 days.
Yeah.
So when do we call that wrong? When do we take up the idea that, yes, if it's not helping me become a better follower of Christ, if it's not helping me live a life of love...
Yeah.
Then when do I say that maybe this doesn't really matter? Mm-hmm. You see, and you know, I talked to you a bit about this on the phone, that sometimes I wonder what I got invited into,
yeah.
right? I mean, I was living a life, evangelizing, serving the homeless.
Sorry to laugh, but that's Rick Carter and I was like, I could throw this book into the garbage. Like
just constantly.
And we love the Bible. We love the Bible more than anything. But you get around certain people and I just want to chuck it in the garbage because like I don't want to talk about it anymore with you people. This is driving me nuts.
Yeah.
Sorry. But when you said that, I was just thinking of Rick and he's like, let's introduce him to this. Maybe not. Maybe
no,
not.
No.
Maybe we need to fix some things before
away.
We yeah.
We do.
So, can we I've got to get into this part.
Just
sorry.
Hold your thought. Hold your thought.
No, that's good.
Like this.
Please.
Ooh. Hold it in your head.
Make a note.
Go ahead.
The point of preterism, if we've made it, in my best opinion, a simplicity, is it's a finality. You made a mention that said that people tell you to bring your life to Christ and lay it down at the cross. Well, when you lay it down at the cross, you're dead. You're gone. That's finality. So there is no afterwards. There is nothing to pick up and go anywhere else because the description in which we've given them is to go die in the same place he did. And that's over. We don't know what the other side is. And preterism is that in itself. It's final. It's the final of everything of the Bible story. And I think our problem is we're recreating and recapitulating because we don't want to let go. We're recreating that same system again. And we're in the cusp of it right now. And it's
okay, sorry, what system? I'm not caught
of,
up on
of
that.
A religious networking system.
Okay, I kind of thought, but
which
I
is,
wasn't sure. Okay.
Which is what Christ came, one, to offer his people. You want a temple? You want a religious system? Here I am. I am it. I am the one. I am the lampstand that you look for that gives you light. I am the bread that you should eat. I am the Holy of Holies. I am everything to you. And they killed it. They murdered it and destroyed it. So he's from that point, and he knew that it would happen. And he said, I'm going to take what you think is the temple system and I'm going to destroy it. I'm going to tear it down. So once it was gone, it's gone. Christ didn't come to teach us how to be a deacon. He didn't come to teach us how to be a preacher. He didn't come to teach us how to be a high priest. He came and taught us how to be servants. To be, that's the only lesson we, through all, whatever he did, was to be a servant. He spent a short period of time being a high priest on the earth, doing the things that the high priest should have been doing. By observing the people that were ill, that were sick, healing them, doing those things, telling them to go wash their eyes, to go into the river, do what you need to do to heal yourself. And then when they didn't want what they were asking for because their own religious leaders were not doing it, they killed him. They killed the system they died for. They were dying to have it, and they killed it off. And he said, okay, that's not going to work for you, so I'm going to do away with it. in our community that we're creating, and I'm sorry to say this, as much as people hate me for being a universalist, I'm hating the church because you're becoming something that you were never meant to be.
Do you ever feel like your soap is doing more harm than good? Well, I did too. Then I found Halfback Mountain Soaps. Born from one person's search for a better bar of soap, these are as pure as a mountain stream. No chemicals, no drying agents, just simple, skin-loving ingredients like shea butter, olive oil, coconut oil, and castor oil. Each bar is handcrafted and scented naturally with things like lavender, cinnamon spice, and sweet lemongrass. Here is a great tip. Grab 5 bars, and they will toss in a handcrafted wooden soap dish too. That dish helps your soap last longer because it dries out between uses. With free shipping on orders over $75, it's easy to stock up or give them as a gift. Take a deep breath, scrub with something real, and feel the difference. Visit halfbackmountainsoap.com today and bring the mountain into your bathroom. Also, you can use code BURROWS10 and get 10% off of your first order. Yeah, it very, very much looks like the synagogue system in a lot of ways. It feels that way. Very, very, with all of its ordinances and modes of thinking, you know. We're probably taking you off your idea.
You're not. So, because that's the part of community.
Yeah.
Is that it's supposed to take you off your idea and take you to see what other people are saying. So, I agree with you, Rick. I would say scripture does tell us what we're supposed to pick up. And you leaned in on it. Carry one another's burdens. So what if the church, exactly. So what if the church became an instant? Because again, I do believe we need to see, and that was to my point before, that I think the secular society, they understand you need groups of people to do things. Groups of people, you know, and as we were saying, no man is an island of himself. We're all connected in different ways. So what would it look like for the church to become a place where we actually learned how to bear one another's burdens better? You see, and to kind of, I know we're probably coming up against the time, something that's really been on my mind and heart lately that we've experienced at our local church, because we've done this, we're doing this work. I can't say we've done it because I don't think we'll ever do it. We're right. Never going to leave certain, you know, ideas, et cetera. But what we've done is we've moved away from being a place where we're storing a whole lot of information. A lot of us are know-it-alls in recovery, right, et cetera. You know, what it would have looked like to just help people. Right? It looks very different than what we were before. If you talk to us 2 months ago and then you talk to us now, you know, we look very different. And what I've really been bothered by, I guess you could say, is the idea of help versus actual help, right? So the idea of help is, and I've done this for years, I strategize, I've been to meeting upon meeting about how to help the homeless. We've talked about it, came up with ideas we never implemented, all this stuff. And then I met this woman. It's an organization called His Coalition for the Homeless. And yes, they mean his. And I sat at a board meeting with these women, and I think there were 2 other men there. And they went around, and I remember particularly they mentioned a woman. I don't remember her name, but they mentioned a woman who was homeless, who was sleeping at the airport. And here I was ready to hear their system, right? Like, wow, you know, this is going to be a meeting. We're really going to learn some stuff. And the lady said, she looked across the room and she said, "Do you have a room? You got a bed? Who has a bed?" And I remember feeling so intimidated in that meeting. Here's a pastor, I'm pastor of a church, and, you know, we do things to help everybody. I said, oh, they're actually trying to help people.
That's hard.
And that is not,
sometimes it's personal.
That is not like church.
No, unfortunately, well, it is. Well, it's the church Jesus wanted us to think
that's
of.
That's the point, is it's away from the church construct that we've developed and created and we're fighting to hold on to. When we tear that down, is when we become the real church that we're supposed to be, or the church that was being left on the earth after 70 AD to help and need every other person and continue on. That's what I'm talking about. You got to tear it down in order to build it back up again, because it's become something that's become an idol to almost the world.
Yeah. But, I mean, think about it this way. When you just said, do you have a bed, right? How many different excuses went through your mind when you heard it?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just curious.
I wasn't even there when he recounted it.
Yeah, because I was thinking Andy asked an extra room right now.
No, it's rented.
Oh, it's rented, of course. You had to get money. Okay.
Yeah.
So much for the love.
But, you know, but honestly, I was thinking I have 2 small daughters that I don't know these people.
Exactly.
I have read and know about an individual who welcomed a homeless person into their home to give them a place to stay, and they assaulted their daughter when she was 10 years old asleep.
Yes,
like, that's the issue, right? And that's where those qualifiers come into play that create division amongst the body today, who does and doesn't deserve help. I'm not saying that that individual doesn't deserve a bed, and they do, but I cannot offer that if it's going to jeopardize my very small daughters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's really the thing where the rubber meets the road.
See, that's much better excuse than I have.
But to me, that's okay. Like, that is the perfect reason to not bring a homeless person in your home.
Yeah.
And it's totally legitimate. And you don't have to think about it anymore. Put it away.
Right.
It's okay.
But the community is large enough to have people available that are willing to do it and have the place hope, right? for it.
Yeah.
You also could donate a gallon of milk, or you could give them some, like a sleeping bag. Like, there's other things that you could do.
I used to do haircuts.
Oh, I know somebody right now has the Mercy Chair.
Church, yeah.
Amber Anderson has the Mercy Chair. She cuts homeless people's hair twice a week.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's cool.
Open for free to the public.
Yeah.
Just come in and get your hair cut. Just as a ministry.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's huge. That's it. I mean, that's where it gets to. I mean, my community that I came from did not teach love. They taught division. They taught spitefulness. They taught hatred for one another, judgment.
You know what? The haircut thing, I'm so sorry.
No,
you know what the haircut thing makes me think? It makes me think everything matters.
Everything matters.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to look at problems, and many of which are huge, and think, I have no idea. I can't deal with that. I can't fix that. But man, everything matters. So you could just do small things, and that's not nothing. If that's what you got, if that's what you're available for.
Well, and to wrap this all the way back around, if everything were the eye, then where would the sense of smell be? It's also a part of, like you had said in the previous episode, where you were talking about how, you know, that's if that's what this congregation is doing, if your ministry is visiting prisoners, then that's your ministry. But if your ministry over here is addressing the social conditions so that people don't go to prison, then that's your ministry. And that's okay. It's a good thing we have two separate body parts doing two separate ministries, because not everybody's going to be in the position. Because, I mean, again, back to the Romans 12, according to the measure of faith that God has given you. That's what it says afterwards, right? Let's go back. Let's read it. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but to think of each other and think of with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as one body has many members, and not all members have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given us. You know, everybody's not going to have the same in the community. And thank God. You can't make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich if all you got peanut butter.
That's
listen,
right.
And so the church that I was talking about during Helene, they became the appendix of the body.
And they got cut out.
Evidently, there was a function for it at some point. That's why it exists, but we don't know what it is now.
That's true.
Seriously.
If I may say this, to your point before about, you know, having children, and by the way, when I listened to these women and they needed that room, there was a no judgment call. That's one thing I love about this organization. It wasn't like they were like, oh, well, we know you have a room. Come on now, speak up.
Right.
We've seen your house. You know, but again, it was a no judgment type of thing. It was, you know, if you have it, you have it. If you don't, you don't. And they've still, this organization, it truly is His Coalition for the Homeless. I'm going to brag on them for a moment. And they've spawned what we're doing at our church. We are doing what we were just sharing about. We're just being available. That's the idea. Just be available. If we have coffee, we have coffee. If we have food, if we have, you know, groceries this week, and we've tried to pull everybody in, different arms, legs, you know, we don't care whether you call yourself a Christian, Christ follower, church, non-believer, atheist organization, that's fine. You want to help people? That's the criteria here. Mm-hmm. You want to carry each other's burdens? Then let's do it. Let's do the work. Now, to your point, right? So you have Mike Miano running the homeless idea here. I'm going to just house the homeless. I'm going to help people. I am that person that's like, just open up the doors and let them all in. Just to help everybody. But then you have people in the body that would frustrate me normally, but now I'm growing and I'm learning how community works, where they would say, but what about safety? What about safety? And you know, me, I'm like, Jesus told us to serve the homeless. Mm-hmm. You over here want to talk about safety. He said, get out of the boat. And I get like that. But then I think back I just say God causes me to think back. He renews my mind and says, no, Mike, calm down for a minute. What about safety?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So you see community works like that, where you get frustrated and you disagree. But
I mean, Tiziana's daughters weren't in the boat with them whenever he told them to get out and walk.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's we don't have those kinds of examples in the Bible for us. So we have to use our brain.
But he also told the disciples once he was at the inn where he was finishing to send them off, he said, if you need a tunic, get you a tunic now. If you need a sword, get a sword now. It's time to do those things that you need to do that involve safety.
That's right.
And protecting of yourself.
Love without wisdom is hardly love. We need to couple love and wisdom together, right? And that's why, again, it brings me back to community, because I can't find wisdom all by myself. No. And I've been saying lately, even leaning in on the preterist community, that the wisdom of God cannot be heard unless we're involved in the church. Now, again, I think we've qualified here that I'm not talking about any brick and mortar building. Yeah. I'm not talking about any denomination. I'm talking about the church that bears one another's burdens. Right. And unfortunately, what we've seen in the preterist community is by and large a lack of bearing one another's burdens. And therefore, I don't know that we're heeding the wisdom of God. I don't even know if we're hearing the wisdom of God.
But I have to admit, I have to admit something. During the Appalachian apocalypse, okay, I had David Curtis, Zach Davis, these were the two men that called me immediately and said, what can we do? And they did. And as a matter of fact, this was one of the most beautiful things is when I told David, I said, look, there's a community, there's a church that's near us. Of course, they're premillennialists and all this. They're old school, but this is the church my wife grew up in. I love these people. They are really out here making it happen. He says, I don't care. You just tell me where to put it. We want to help. The end. That was the preterist community by and large. He put it out. He let me speak to the whole group, and they sent us, I think it was $11,000 to $12,000 to that church. And then the
same, wow, you know, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. Like, as a community, they come together. And there's a lot of times, you know, David will ask or you will ask, somebody like will ask, and they'll step up in a big way. I just wish we could do it in other ways than just giving. If we could talk about, like, whenever somebody within the church gets hurt and we could bring it before an elder board and we could actually deal with something instead of people being cast out to the side and left with no one to really help them and the community at large not being able to deal with it. Those are some of the issues that I deal with in preterism. I think that there's plenty of people that want to help and are trying, but you know what I mean?
There's too many of us to leave it. We'll leave a sick man at the gate and walk by him and not even help him.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I'm getting at when I say any discussion about preterism ends up being academic. It's not preterism. It's not absorbing preterism. It's not any of that. But if you put a couple people in a room to talk about preterism, what you're going to get is the things you're talking about. That doesn't mean out of that room and out of that conversation, they're not different people.
Right.
We go back to the...
It's a very specific kind of thing I'm trying to say.
We go to that big round table that we did that you were there, Andy, at Berean Bible Church, and basically the preterist community is 100% an academic community. They're not a community.
They're not a community.
No. It's all academic.
That's what I was hoping to lean in on this entire time. That's not a community.
No. All right. I asked in that whole thing, I said...
It's a cohort maybe, but not a community.
Well, I asked, I said, should we organize? Should we be a church, a denomination? Should we
sound like Constantine?
Workers of the world, unite.
Dude, we shut him down hard. We all shut him down. I was like, no, that's what I said.
I got stomped instantly for asking. I said, well, if we're all saying, because the whole purpose of the, help remind me of the title of that roundtable discussion. What now? Was that our theme at that roundtable?
Yeah, it's just basically about the worldview.
Yeah, worldview. And I said, well, you know, if denominations are doing the things that are community-like, we're not a community. Preterism is nothing like anything to do with what we're speaking against, but yet we're not doing anything like it. I said, should we be? And I got stomped.
It's just difficult.
To the point that Rick had mentioned, and to your point, the Ricks, would be, now, Pastor Dave and Zach are in community. They're in communities.
Yes.
Now, there are communities within the preterist community.
That's right.
There's not a preterist community.
100%.
Right.
100%. And that's the problem, is that we need to get to a place where we either start electing or, you know, and again, we need to organize. You have to just call it what it is. Communities are organized. And again, it can be a loose-fitted community. Yeah. We can agree that there's different communities. That maybe is the big problem, is that everybody wants to qualify what community should mean to them, including me.
Yeah.
You see? Mm-hmm. So instead of doing that.
Oh, yeah. Are you CBV?
I am. I'm telling you.
CCC.
That's right.
Yeah. Which one are you?
IBB?
Yeah. I'm FPCCCBB. Okay. So I got the whole gamut there. And
I'm down with OP.
I was going to say, and the interesting thing is, I know that. That's right. Amen. Me too. OPP men. But, so the point being, the funny thing is, when you mentioned that, I knew all the terms because it's an academic intellectual exercise. Right. We know all the code names and code, you know, acronyms and all this stuff. And that's good and great, right? I love the intellectual aspect of preterism. You know, I wanted to learn more. I literally have a moniker or a phrase I use, zeal empowered by knowledge, right? That because Paul lamented that his generation had a zeal for God, but it was not based upon knowledge. Mm-hmm. But dare I say we have a zeal for community, but it's not based upon knowledge.
Yeah.
We keep talking about the preterist community, and we need community. We need healthy community. That's another thing. Because I don't want, let's face it, there's negative. We were talking about it before about churches that, you know, or ideas of church that have popped up over the years where we wouldn't want to be anywhere near that idea, right?
the sphincter of the body.
Yes, there you go. That's right. Got it. That's
you
right.
You get your panties in a bunch.
So that's where we need to start identifying. Well, then there's also, not only is there no community, there's also unhealthy community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and talking about the idea of help, another thing I think about that I'm telling you, there's so many ways to take these conversations. Thinking about the idea of help, most people want to bring you in on a community where it might not actually be helpful for you. Mm-hmm. So are we actually helping that person, or is it an idea of helping? I've listened to people talk to people about Jesus. We alluded to that before, where I've listened to them and I'm like, man, I don't know that Jesus is going to help that person. It's actually probably going to make them worse. And I know a man that said something about you made them twice as much as bad as they were, right? Than they were before. So I wonder about that in the Christian community, the preterist community, the church. Are we helping? Mm-hmm. Are we helping? What are we inviting people into? Is it healthy? Are we helping people have healthy increase in their life?
Just like a recent friend of ours in a men's weekly discussion that we have, he just experienced what most preterists have experienced is excommunication.
I mean, literally this week.
Yeah, I think it was last week, but to get into preterism,
literally last week,
you have to get excommunicated. You get to get excommunicated from the structure that you so dear to. So
that just sucks, man. That just sucks. That just sucks. Yeah. So much.
There is no community in going into it.
But dude, they're trying to protect their community. That's why they're excommunicating.
Because they have a poisonous belief system.
They're protecting their community. And there is always that side of the community.
Right,
if you have a community, you have to protect it. And when you protect it, you have to set rules. And when you set rules and you have a leader, then you have to exercise those rules in order to keep the community healthy.
I mean, all churches. Am I wrong? All churches community based on a specific set of beliefs, right? I mean, that's just.
All
that's
communities not what are based on a specific set of beliefs. I mean, right, you don't have cultures that
it's
don't.
It's even more explicit with church, though. Yeah. With a church.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's not a value judgment, by the way. It's just that's just how things are. It's not a value judgment.
For sure.
I mean, I guess, Andy, is a community better with sort of the rules and guidelines? And
I think community is defined by its rules and guidelines, for better or for worse.
I understand. That's good. That's good.
But when you're. Preterism is specifically, I feel like, a sort of a threat, or at least a perceived threat.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To a lot of like religious thoughts, Christian thought systems.
To like 99.7% of the church, actually. Yeah.
Community guidelines are ways of navigating emotionally and spiritually with one another. Community guidelines are not trying to control what you do and don't believe and what theologies you do and don't adopt.
That's a little different.
And like the fact is that like dispensationalism, like the whole idea of the rapture is new.
But listen,
that's not an old
thing.
When
a community, like a church community, makes the decision to create a statement of faith and saying, this is our church charter.
And there you go.
Once you create those and you say, this is what we believe, this is what we do.
And that every
but
person
that's not
that
a community
joins.
Guideline. That's you can't get in if you don't know the secret handshake.
You know what I mean? It's protecting the community by and large, what they're doing. Like, okay,
It's protecting the community. It's forcing homogeneity.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Sameness.
It's forcing. A homogenous ideology and culture that vilifies the other.
It's protecting.
And puffs up the self, but it puffs up. It's not protecting.
It's protecting the homogenous community, those who want to be that way.
Right. It is.
It's protecting that.
Homogeneity.
Yeah.
That's how you say it.
That feels right.
It's protecting the homogeneity of those people.
And they're using the Bible to protect themselves with it because it says be
careful. All I'm saying,
I just want to make the worst joke about, you know, who really protected their homogeneity?
Who was that?
Oh, you just fill it in. I'm not going to say it out loud.
The Dutch part wasn't as fun as the setup, was it?
Yeah. John Calvin protected his homogeneity.
Yeah.
Big time. All right. So
I don't think I'm a Calvinist, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm just saying.
I don't really dig a lot of what he says.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Or what he did.
Yeah. I don't.
The thing, again, when we start defining what these communities are, mm-hmm. if you're in that community, if you are a part of, I'll just use my myopic view of the church that I have here, these deeply fundamental premillennial dispensational churches. They have ministers that the people believe is the man of God and that they pray that whatever comes out of his mouth is coming from the Holy Spirit. They live according to these rules where they only wear skirts. It's not written in their charter, but it's an unwritten rule that they do. Women don't wear severe amounts of makeup. They just have little ways that they have in this community and they want to protect the community. And there are plenty of women in that community that are totally fine with this idea.
Yeah, they're down with it.
They're totally fine with it. And this is what they want and it makes them happy. They want to protect that.
The difference is this is what I want because it makes me happy versus this is what I want because I'm right and you're wrong.
Right.
And that's the problem.
It is.
If you want to live your trad wife way, like I'm not mad at you. Like go do your thing, chicken wing. But the problem is when you start saying that all women must want this thing or there's something fundamentally wrong with them, that's the problem.
Then it's no longer community. Now they are launching an they're using evangelism as their form of trying to get you to become a part of what they do.
And there's gatekeeping. And it's all fear-based. That's the problem. Fear-based. Yeah. Yes. Because it's not based on love and it's not based on connection. It's not based on community. It's based on fear. And like if your religion, if your belief systems and if the charter of your church and your statement of faith is a prison, boy howdy.
Dude, it's like when you go, I'm not Chinese and I'm not into communism, so don't go the wrong way, but just hear me out. So a lot of people talk about the illegality of Christianity in China. It's not illegal to be a Christian. No. It's illegal to proselytize.
Yeah, it's for anybody to proselytize. Yeah.
It's all underground.
So you can have a belief and you can live according to it. But the minute that you try to take it to somebody else, then you're crossing the line. Not
allowed. So it's completely underground.
I'm not saying that it's right or wrong.
No.
I'm just saying.
No, yeah. The proselytization?
No, the whole church, the Christian church.
No.
It's all underground.
They just have churches.
They have churches, dude.
They just have churches.
But they're not allowed to proselytize.
They're just not allowed to proselytize. That's it.
Yeah, but you can be what you are. You're just not allowed to set up on a street corner and invite other people.
Oh, you mean the proselytizing is underground?
It's all underground.
Oh, okay.
Of course. I thought you meant the church was underground. Well, I mean, I don't think so.
I haven't seen the churches in China that are especially the Christian ones. Uh-huh. But far as the evangelism, it's and being a Christian there is like underground. It's not outwardly done.
You're not well,
no, because but you don't understand. That is true of every religion.
Yeah.
It's not like Christianity got picked out.
No.
You just can't evangelize. You can't sell.
You just live your life your way and let other people live their lives their way.
You can't evangelize Buddhism. You can't evangelize Christianity.
It's almost as if they've created a separation of church and state.
It's not allowed.
Yeah.
The act of evangelizing is what's banned.
You can evangelize the state, though. Yes. You are allowed to evangelize
the state. Oh, that's true. Yeah,
yes,
that's
you
fair.
Can do
and
that.
They, as a matter of fact, probably actively encouraged.
They do. As a matter of fact, I have been to China, and I was there, and I met the woman that was my interpreter. Told me a story about how her grandmother was a Christian, and at that time it was underground. They weren't allowed to be vocal about it. But when we went to Tiananmen Square and I asked a question out loud, I said, "How do you feel about what they did to the students here in the 80s? And she looked at me and she said, "We don't discuss that." I said, "Oh, I understand, but how do you feel about it?" She was like, "Oh, I'm not discussing it either." They just cut it right off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's understood. That's how you protect the narrative and keep the community together. And that's how they keep their community together.
You have your personal private thoughts about things, but you don't get into these bloody battles and arguments in public because the government will come, you know.
So how do you feel, Mike?
Have we solved community in the boroughs? Did we solve it?
I 100% solved right now.
We expressed that we're disenfranchised with the idea of community. So I think so. I tend to think that's the healthy place to be.
That's the place I feel one of the most proudest things that I have about the boroughs is the differences that we have in this room.
Yeah.
And how much we love each other.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
And I love the way you spell.
Listen, it's
I don't know. It's just like I'm going for it.
I love you. I miss your Musk. What is that from?
Anchorman.
Anchorman. Yeah.
I missed your Musk.
I got good genes.
Well, you really challenged us to think. Is there any final thoughts that you want to give us, Mike, before we close out the second part here?
Yeah, I'll just end with this. I will say that, you know, in light of what we were ending with there, talking about the different types of community, I appreciate your passion. Right. So I appreciate the, when community is unhealthy, we can see it and we can sense that. Now, when I read in Corinthians where it talks about Paul writing to the church and he's saying, you know, there's some who believe that you could eat all things and some people who believe that you can only eat vegetables. I tend to believe that the people who believe that they could eat only vegetables would have fought you tooth and nail about the meat thing. It's not like they were just like, yeah, whatever. All right, we're going to all work together and get over it. No, they would have put up boundaries, would have said people that eat meat are idol worshipers. Mm-hmm. They would have done that. And yet they were all a part of the same church. You see, so I agree with you that, you know, when we see these churches put up these barriers that are so not like the Bible, not like the church I read in the New Testament at all, or they're like the people that I read about in the New Testament that I don't want to be a part of and I don't want to be like, that would make you worse than you were before. So my point is, I think we need to be grace. We need to give grace to institutions that are doing their very best to put up barriers, because again, the people that believe they could only eat meat would have done that. They would have been like, no, they only eat vegetables. They would have said, you know what, we're not going near those people. But Paul was teaching us at a young age, and we're still young, that we have to learn how to get over those things. We have to learn how to work together. And there's going to be some communities that are going to do it better than others. Yeah. But I think we leaned in the previous podcast that Constantine's church saved some folks, led them to Jesus Christ, encouraged them to follow after Jesus. As much as I might disagree with it, it worked. It could, because they were in community. And my mind and my heart tonight would be that we need to find ourselves in community. That's the healthiest place to be, right, is in community. And again, yeah, I appreciate the Burroughs that's exactly what this is. This is community.
Right.
And this is healthy. This is healthier than most of the churches that are out there. So thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean,
thank you.
I know,
that was very sweet.
We always get that Miano sweetness up in here. That's one of the things that
he has nice hair too.
He does. I wanted to pull out. Too bad it's all on his back. So anyway, we just
long and flowing.
How you know that, Rick, is none of my business.
I know. My bad. So anyway, one final thing that I've been thinking about
a lot. It's a part about being in community. You know those things.
When you get to the end of the Bible and it talks about how that there's this, you know, this city with these gates that are never shut. And it says, it's this thing that I always forget about it, but I want to bring it up. It says that the kings of the nations will bring their glory into it. But it also says that the leaves on that tree are for the healing of the nations. And so to me, that's an eternal thing that's going on there. Do you get it? Do you see that as a completed work?
Right.
Do you see it as an ongoing ongoing thing?
It's kind of interesting. The leaves in the beginning were terrible, and the leaves now are the best thing for the world.
The leaves are for the healing. And my only point is that the kings of the nations, these are other cultures and other things that are bringing their glory. That means that whatever is in them, they're bringing it into the city. So this is going to become a multicultural, multinational, very different, eclectic-looking group.
Yeah.
And they're coming to a place where they can heal and be with one another.
And the city doesn't need to build a temple within it.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't need a son, because
God and Christ are the temple.
To me, it's like, if you look at a worldview from the preterist view and we say we're actually there, mm-hmm, then think about what that means for you. What does it mean? That means that everybody that you see has the potential for healing and you can be a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, you can
like
be a part of
bearing one another's burdens.
Yes. That's right.
Which is part exactly of right. What I believe that Christ did. He died so the gates would never be shut. There would be no gatekeepers ever.
Yeah.
For anybody.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know people will disagree with that, but you know, we're not gatekeepers of anything.
No.
At all.
Well, Pastor Miano, it has been an absolute joy having you back here.
Absolutely a pleasure, sir.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure being
here.
Hopefully
next time you won't talk so much.
Working on it.
I understand.
Did you get out what you had hoped?
I hope.
You would get out? Did you?
You sure?
Okay. I'm good, because most people say, I got about 1/10 of what I wanted to say.
No, I as like, I look yes. over my notes, we did pretty
good. But I was able to say appendix and sphincter, so therefore I feel fulfilled.
You win. You win at life.
Tiziana.
Gold medal.
I love you.
I love you too.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Andy. Damn, I love you.
A pleasure.
You're the sweetest. Say I love you back, Andy.
I don't know how to make the sound of winking, but insert the sound of violent winking.
Listen.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like on the inside of your eye.
That eye is unhealthy.
Very
that eye has conjunctivitis in it.
That's an unhealthy community right there.
If your wink sounds like that, we have a problem. What's your insurance?
Yeah. Put your eyeball back in.
Yeah,
listen,
for real.
If anybody, any of you guys, do any of you know how to turn your eyelids inside out?
Yeah. You know what? No.
I've never
and
had
you know
that
what? The people that do know how to do that, stop it.
Yeah. But have you ever
You know what? Knock it off.
Have you ever pulled your eyelid off of your eyeball and heard it go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think that's
the sound I was making.
Didn't sound like that.
Big Daddy.
Oh yeah.
You better hit the road, man. You got a long drive home.
Thank you for staying.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but Mike again.
Thank you. I love this.
Thanks so much for being on the Burrows, man.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure.
This is awesome.
He actually listens and he actually supports. He always posts about us and he talks about us. And
yeah, he does.
Mike is he's helped. He helped the Burrows early on. He really did by being here and talking about us. And so you mean a lot to us, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Awesome stuff. All right. Well, we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Bye. Later.
Don't be an appendix sphincter. When I'm in the kitchen, I make it look like I'm hosting my own cooking show. Pots clanging, oven doors slamming, me yelling stuff like, "Where's the roux?" I don't even know what a roux is, honestly. Meanwhile, what am I actually doing? Sprinkling on a little thing called my secret ingredient. That's it. That's the whole magic trick. They've got two blends, and honestly, they're doing all the work while I just look busy. First up, everything seasoning. This stuff turns your basic breakfast into a brunch masterpiece. I've put it on chicken, eggs, toast, hash browns. Oh, and last week, I sprinkled on leftover pizza like a total savage. Game changer. And yes, I got a little cocky and threw it on some apple slices. Is that illegal? Probably. Did it taste amazing? Yes. Now, for the main event, steakhouse seasoning. This seasoning turns your grill into a holy shrine of meat. Burgers, next level. Steaks, legendary. Portobello mushrooms, so good, I had to sit down for a minute. One shake and suddenly people are like, "Dang, you must have marinated this for days." And I'm like, "Totally, yep, marinated it in secret magic." So if you want to look like a culinary genius without actually doing much, head over to MySecretBlends.com. That's MySecretBlends.com. And don't forget to use code Burrows at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's B-U-R-R-O-S at checkout for 20% off your first order. Bang your pots, slam your drawers, but just know, the real secret, it's in the shake. My secret ingredient. Try it today.
Ba-ba-bum. You know what I realized just now, too?
What?
Away from the sphincter talk.
But like, I like how I first... that like sparked it.
Right. No. When I first was here, it was always just us doing a separate thing.
Yeah.
And the first time I ever came down to be part of the Burrows was when Pastor Mike Miano was here.
Oh, really?
Time.
That's right.
That was the first time that I ever like came here to be a part of the thing. Because I remember I bought your book, Freaked Out by the New Covenant, because I wanted to like not be a jerk and not be unprepared. And I was like trying to speed read it at my house. And that Jubilee was like 5 minutes old.
Yeah.
Yeah, because y'all had just found out you were pregnant. And I was like, oh, because I had just had the baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wild?
It is wild.
That's neat.
I remember the first time that I met you, Mike, we sat down at Chili's and had a lunch. And as we were talking, I was like, this guy is lovely. This is nothing like what I've watched on YouTube. Because you were so aggressive in your, you know, in your early days. Like you said, you're a recovering
know-it-all.
But just everybody, you know, everybody has like these ideas of who a person is. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do testimonies, is because I wanted to get to know who they are now.
Yeah.
I don't want to just, you know, everybody's got an idea of somebody, but that's not how you know somebody. I don't want to know you by how somebody else talks about you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty much the same way it is with Christianity, with Jesus. You get it? it's not about what you say about him. It's how you do what you do with him. Right. That's what speaks volumes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you might try to say all the words right and then be a total burrow.
Yeah. Well, he says you could curse him and it didn't matter. So you could say whatever you want about him. Yeah. What you do about him.
Yeah.
Thank God he said that.
I know, right?
Ain't that crazy?
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
Peace out.
Later.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so tired.